Greg, what's up? This is Evan from New York City. A new listener to the show, but I like it a lot. I discovered you through Freeman and Jamie. I'm a big fan of them. I think you're doing a great job. I was listening to number 110 where the guy was talking about no planes theory on 9/11 and that it was a media construction. I don't buy the no plane stuff personally. I know people who saw the planes. I didn't see the planes. I saw the burning buildings. I was living in New Jersey at the time and you could see them clearly from my rooftop. And then when the first building fell, I went back up there and I looked and there was one building standing and a lot more smoke coming from the ground. To my eyes, it looked exactly like what was on TV. There was no difference there. And as far as the eight buildings falling, I'm not sure about eight. I know all the World Trade Center buildings were damaged that day. One and two fell, obviously the Twin Towers. Number seven fell later that day in the afternoon. But the other buildings were damaged beyond repair. And they were dismantled over the course of the next few months or whatever it was. Once the search and rescue and stuff was over, they started to take apart these buildings. You can see videos on YouTube of exactly that. I remember seeing building number six, which was basically hollowed out. So yeah, those buildings were destroyed and taken down, but not that day. So I just wanted to let you know. All right, bro. Keep up the good work. I'll keep listening. All the best to you. Thanks.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
Hi ho, hi ho, it's down the hole we go, people. How are you, Higher Side Chatters? Better every day, I hope. And me, well, I'm drinking a little drink and smoking a little smoke, trying to get my head right for the mind-melding road ahead. Today we're going to go deep into the Anunnaki story with one of today's leading experts on the story, Gerald Clark, and he ties in so many other topics, consciousness, chakra systems, reincarnation, the senses, the limitations of the human body itself, the major religions of the world, the symbolism we see everywhere, the entities involved with secret societies. I mean, this could be the big story, and I found that a lot of these pieces do fit, and it's a perspective that's hard to ignore among the many strange possibilities that we entertain. It does take some time for us to get through this history, the lineage of these entities, and the tales of their time on Earth, but once Gerald lays a good base, and this stuff starts relating to the things we see from the elite today and the mind control grid, it gets all the more fascinating, and I'm sure a lot of you will tend to agree. So pack your glass and park your ass, people, and let's take the ride of rides on the sacred zodiac wheel from beyond the origins of humanity right up to the troubled times in which we reside today. You will hear a lot of pop coming from Gerald's mic right here in the beginning, but we got that fixed after 3 or 4 minutes, so don't think it's going to be like that the whole time. And we'll get down to it on the other side of this little ditty with the man himself, Gerald Clark.
I walk on the highest side. I walk on the highest side. UFOs carry the elite, while cryptids sprinkle fairy dust, we call it DMT. The machine elves capture the layout of the rapture. We can't let leprechauns get the gold that they're after. Black-eyed children come around and they give you the creeps. Greg Carlwood chilling with a gang of big feet. I could say that is that in a reptilian pope hat, but I'd rather get started on a higher side chat.
Alright people, we've all seen ancient aliens and heard of the Anunnaki, but what if there's more to the story? What if in fact the story remains the biggest secret ever kept from humanity and is the source for all of our strife? The manipulative religions of the world, the duality and conflict between light and dark, our holographic reality, the secret rituals of the elite, the symbolism we see woven throughout our culture, and pretty much everything else. Well, you just might start seeing it that way when we speak with today's guest, Gerald Clark. He graduated right here in San Diego at UCSD in computer engineering and also in MS electrical engineering, where he was a PhD student for 3 years. His career took him all over the world and sparked an interest in man's earliest technologies and accomplishments, as well as the cuneiform tablets of the Sumerians. Sumerians. While that interest became a passion, and he authored the book The Anunnaki of Nibiru, Mankind's Forgotten Creators, Enslavers, Destroyers, Saviors, and Hidden Architects of the New World Order. And he's now one of the leading authorities on the Anunnaki story throughout history and right into the modern times. It's going to get weird, and I've never been more ready. Gerald, my man, welcome to THC.
Hey, thanks, buddy. I'm glad to be here. I want to say welcome to all your listeners, and I'm really excited about doing the show with you. I know you're up to speed.
Yeah, man, this is a real pleasure. I've heard you on Coast to Coast and a couple other shows out there in this wheelhouse, and I'm glad I could get you on. We've talked about the Anunnaki before with guys like Michael Tellinger and James Gilliland, but an understanding of the story and the names is so crucial to getting the context of our situation today. So I'm going to give you the floor a little bit. I know you've done this 1,000 times, but start us off with your version of the Anunnaki story so that we all know the aspects that are most important and relative to understanding how we ended up in this mess.
Okay, buddy. I know you know I've done this before, and I'll try to do it in a sequence that makes sense to people.
Yeah.
There was a race of beings that are reported in the Sumerian documents. They call them the Anunnaki. Anunnaki. Turns out those two names, Anu and Ki, show up in the genealogy table that I did. One of them was from another planet called Nibiru, and he was the king of Nibiru at the time this went down. And the Ki turns out to be the name of Earth, and also the being that he had a child with that had a very, very large influence on our history. So how did it start? According to them, they had problems with their atmosphere during their perihelion with the sun. Radiation was destroying their atmosphere, creating holes, kind of like what we see on our Earth. They had an opportunity to fix that. They realized that putting a transition metal in its in an ionized form in the atmosphere would shield radiation and they came perihelion with our sun. They weren't originally in our solar orbit, but were trapped into our orbit according to the Enuma Elish account, which was their Babylonian epic of creation. We'll get into that in a little bit. So at that point, Anu's the king. He's got two kids. One's name is Enki. He's the chief scientist, explorer. Doesn't look like much of a bureaucrat in terms of running operations, but he was very skilled. And he also had another son named Enlil, who was the son of Anu and Ki, or Arash. That was her name. So it turns out that Ki was Anu's half-sister, and that's why Enlil plays such a role. So there's Enlil and Enki. Okay, keep those in mind. Mm-hmm. One's like a bureaucratic commander. That's Enlil. The other one's like a wild-eyed scientist that knows no limits, okay, including genetic limits. Okay, so he sent his son Enki to the Earth to verify that there was enough gold that they could ionize. Some people have asked me, well, why didn't they just make it if they were so advanced? It's a good question. And we can look to some of the alchemy that went on with one of their progenitors, and we can talk about that. Okay, so Enki was sent to the Earth to verify that there was gold here that they could use to ionize in their atmosphere to shield them from radiation. This is about 450,000 years ago. Quite a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Landed in the Persian Gulf area, built the city of Eridu, E-R-I-D-U, which you can go online and look at with Google Earth or what have you. Very first city on the planet if it's 450,000 years old. They started looking for gold in the Persian Gulf, couldn't get it fast enough, got vectored to Africa by Anu. So Enki left the Mesopotamian region, went to South Africa, where we now know there are thousands of gold mines that are owned by the Anglo-American Mining Corporation and the several others, but the latest is the Viking Mining Corporation that just set up their operation in Ghana. Go check out the largest deposit in West Africa where the Ebola virus is breaking out is right there. Okay, so Enki's getting gold in South Africa. He brought about 50 workers with him. They called him the Igigi, I-G-I-G-I. That's what they show up in the Atrahasis account. And they did a lot of the work. They were dredging rivers, building structures, mining underground, and they worked pretty hard. And after a very long time, and they tracked time in accordance with the time it took for their planet to go around the sun, which they called a shar, S-H-A-R, 3,600 years. You know, and in actuality, when you have a planet that goes around that far, it could be off by plus or minus 50 years, according to our modern analysis of how a planet travels around an elliptical orbit. So that being said, it was, you know, about a shar is about 3,600 years. They've been working in these mines for many of those. So we have a time marker now, 450,000 years ago. And also the end of the Sumerian account list where the flood occurred was about 241,000. So if you subtract that off of this 450,000, you can see how long they were there working. okay? Because it wasn't but 600 years after Noah became the king where he actually experienced the flood. So you can back up from the 241,000 years ago and see that there were multiple floods, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that. So Enki's getting gold in South Africa. He's got enough workers to kind of whet his appetite. They don't have enough of a labor force to do what needed to be done. Underground mining tools and so on and so forth, because they originally planned on getting it, looks like colloidally, out of the ocean. So that said, the Ajiji miners finally had enough. They were led by one of their fellow gods, as he was called in the Atrahasis in the first tablet. His name was Allah. Surprise, surprise. Where do we hear that name these days under the sign of the crescent moon? So he riles them up, tells them to burn their tools. They go to his father's house to ask for relief. Turns out it's Enlil. And you ask yourself, what's Enlil doing in Africa if Enki was sent down there? Well, about 5,000 years later, after Enki got here, Enlil was dispatched to kind of take care of some of the bureaucratic functions that included bond heaven earth, communicating with the Buru, which was going on up in the Mesopotamian area near Sippar and Nippur, which was their landing port and their mission control center, respectively. Okay, so Enlil shows up down in Africa, probably bringing his bureaucratic know-how down there to beat the workers into submission and get him to produce faster, okay? Because they surround his house and say, hey, where's the relief?
Mm-hmm.
He comes out and goes, after Nusku, the guard tells him what's going on. He's like the liaison. He goes, okay, well, let's just kill one and send him back to work. They'll get the message. And about this time, Anu has been summoned. They're his father. And Enki has been summoned. And Belit Ili, or Ninma, who is Isis, was summoned. So then several members of this supposed council all of a sudden get together and go, hey, we got to talk about this uprising. We've got to do something. So now all of a sudden you realize these ancient astronauts had an organized council of 12, six men, six women. They all had their ranks. I listed them in my book. And they had cast lots about this time when all the work with mining was going on. And it turns out that Enki got Africa. Enlil stayed in Mesopotamia, supposedly, but here he was in Africa in this account. Anu went back to Nibiru, and Ninhursag got the Sinai Peninsula assigned to her. And Inanna got to assign the Indus Valley. So they kind of separated these advanced team that were here because apparently they didn't get along very well. Okay, so they revolt. They ask for relief. Enlil says, kill one or go and get back to work. He was a slave taskmaster, quintessential slave taskmaster. at that point, Anu interrupts, says, we've been hearing the noise. Sounds like they're overworked. Enki agrees, whether he's butt-kissing his dad or he really agrees that they've been overworked, he agrees with him and says, we need to find him relief. At this point, the council meets. They talk about tools or producing primitive workers out of some genetic material. And they opted to go the genetic route. And Enki and Ninhursag were dispatched to Africa to go do their thing. They knew about the bipedal hominids on South Africa. They chose one, multiple ones probably, according to the account. They messed around with all kinds of animal DNA, chimeras, trying to produce a worker that could follow their instructions. But obviously not encroach on the consciousness, the lifestyle, the mental capabilities, the dimensionality that the Anunnaki had. These are supposed mm-hmm. to be just slaves. So that said, you know, imagine being a scientist and given the constraints to try to come up with some being that you can control. It's not going to get out of control, yet it can intelligently do enough of the complex things that you as an advanced race wants done. Right?
Right.
It reminds me of Zog the caveman, with the alien encounter on YouTube, some of those funny claymations that, you know, the alien trying to get through to Zog, and he's just mortifyingly stupid. He just can't get it. Well, you know, they had that issue too. So they're like, okay, well, how much intelligence do we got to give them to make them understand what we want them to do? And so Enki and his half-sister, who was the medical officer, got the task to do this. And they succeeded. And Ninhursag reports to the council, I have completed what you've asked, blah, blah. It reminded me of a TPS report from the office, you know. Even she had to report to her boss that, hey, I got it done. Status report, here we go. So they got it done. And after messing around with the genetics, when you mix a horse with a donkey, you get a mule, right? And it's impotent. Well, the same was true with these beings. They weren't able to procreate. And they needed a genetic upgrade in order to do that. Well, so here we are. The Ajiji miners got relief. Now, what are they doing all of a sudden, right? They're not mining anymore. Well, apparently they were also called the Watchers in the Lost Book of Enoch. And they were in charge of low Earth orbiting craft, satellites, watching the Earth to determine its environmental state to inform the Anunnaki so they knew what was going on. They didn't want some earthquake happening, a tsunami bringing in a flood and wiping them out in the Mesopotamian plain, which it was prone to do.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. So at this point, they get their relief. They produce their primitive worker. And that's where you and I come in. Through this in vitro fertilization and having Nin Hartzog carry the baby to term. And it looked like a full 9-month term. It wasn't accelerated. Maybe later they genetically augmented their workers to have an accelerated life. But it looks like their normal gestation period is the same one that we have. So here we are. We're like faced with the idea of these ancient astronauts genetically augmenting a life form that was on this planet that just happened to be bipedal and made it just smart enough that it could do their bidding. So that's a real shock for most people to find that out. So how do we know this is myth and not, or is true and not just myth?
Right.
So that's where we start looking to the various written sources that we have about our history, whether it's the Bible or the Quran or it's the Nag Hammadi Gospels, the Lost Book, whatever your source is. You start synthesizing all those and you realize that some advanced beings, according to most of these cultures, came here and dispensed technology and civilizing aspects to these cultures to make them who they were. And the Sumerians were the penultimate example of that, having hundreds of firsts show up in their culture practically overnight. So let's not skip too far forward. Okay. So now the humans are in doing all the slave labor. And one of the really interesting things to think about is if this advanced scientist designed these beings to do these tasks, one of the primary features he would have had to design in them is that a control mechanism so that he could control an uprising, because that was the reason they replaced the Ajiji in the first place. So that's where some important questions come in, and I think we're going to talk about those later, relative to the electromagnetic spectrum in our consciousness. Right?
Right.
So,
right.
So okay. So so now we know that The Ajiji slaves did the mining. They revolted. We replaced them. And next thing you know, these humans, after they get genetically upgraded by the next being that shows up, which to me is kind of my hero. This is the caduceus-bearing son of Enki, whose name is Ningxida. Now, it turns out he has multiple incarnations. I'm just going to focus on a couple because it ends up getting crazy when you realize what they were capable of. Okay, so first of all, we probably ought to put a stake in the ground right now to understand that they had also known as names, and the reason they did that is because they lived so long. They were immortal to the primitive workers who only had a lifespan of 120 years. These beings measured their years in shars. So one shar for them was 1 year. Well, that's 3,600 years to us. So imagine you're 100 years old. They're 36,000 years old. Right,
that's hard to even wrap your head around.
Wow. Well, so now keep that in mind. Let's wrap our head around it, because in the Sumerian accounts list, where Eridu was the very first city where kingship was lowered, all of a sudden, I just told you, Enki built the first one called Eridu when he showed up. That was his Earth Station 1, or his home far away, that he was using as an outpost while they were looking for gold in the Persian Gulf. Okay? So this is really, really fascinating. So now, after a period of time, they couldn't procreate. This Ningxida being shows up, who turns out to be the son of Enki, and he's involved in doing a genetic upgrade on them. This is your biblical story of taking the material from Adam's rib and creating the Eve. Well, it actually was Ningxida upgrading them so they could procreate. They get taken off back to Eridu, where the Garden of Eden has been proven with the four rivers that originated there. You can see this from satellite now. The Tigris, Euphrates, the Pishon and Galfon is what it. I can't pronounce the last one, but there were four rivers that came together. Garden of Eden. Well, there it is in Eridu, just like Enki's hanging garden. I mean, that's where it was. His medicinal garden. So these beings are taken there to get monitored to see if they can produce offspring to meet the labor requirements. Enki and Enlil there. They're probably a little sensitive about what design requirements have been put into them. Imagine Enki hasn't divulged the degree of scientific nature of what he's done with these beings. Hidden code so that there's a latency in our DNA sensitive to timing of the universe so you could wake up potentially. How would Enlil know that unless he was a geneticist? Those kind of things. So think about how sophisticated this being is, okay? Who gave us intelligence, gave us a limited lifespan according to his writings of 120 years, and he also gave us the spirit of one of the sacrificed Ijiji, I believe, whose name was Yawela, and transferred the energy into our body. So is this why we have this destructive consciousness? Because we were the consciousness of one of the Ijiji that got sacrificed, and they were kind of the slaves in the first place? Probably. So anyway, so now let's come back to the Garden of Eden. Enki and Enlil are there, and they're monitoring these Adamus, the Adapas that were originally created. And there were, so you have to understand, there were multiple versions, but the ones that were augmented to procreate were brought there to be watched. Enlil clearly is a little suspicious of his brother, because these beings can get out of control. They start procreating, and all of a sudden, you got a genetic war in your hands. His offspring outnumber me by, you know, umpteen to three or whatever it is. And he's a bureaucrat and a commander, and he probably thought like that, right? So at this point, he's warning these beings. Enlil is calling himself God in the Genesis account not to eat anything in Enki's garden, in particular the plant of the knowledge of good and evil. He doesn't want them to know they're enslaved, so they revolt, right? That would be a reason a bureaucratic commander would tell somebody not to do something. Instead of telling them, hey, look at all this wonderful stuff you can partake of in here, and, you know, these over here are kind of, they're not good for you, so, no, you give them the severe message, you eat this, you'll die, right? That's what he said. So, right. then Enki shows up and says, no, actually, you won't die. He tells him the truth. This is a scientist talking, right? You'll actually take on the consciousness of the knowledge of good and evil like we have. Clearly not what Enlil wanted with his slave species coming from his brother. Okay? So that's the real story. You know, and then, so they leave the garden. I won't get into all the details of what happened. The Adapa actually became Enki's chief priest at Eridu, and he taught him just about everything known to a man on the planet. Really quite an interesting story. but at that point, they started proliferating. They could procreate now. And all of a sudden, I mean, imagine how many people there could be if it's unfettered in 600 years. The United States right. has been around for 200 years, and all of a sudden we got 300 million people. How many were there after 600 years? See what I'm saying? Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Their lifespan may be a little short or whatever, but there could have been a lot of them, millions and millions, okay? Well, at this point, Enlil is complaining in the Atrahasis account that the noise of mankind is too much. And he calls this Anunnaki Council, the same one that agreed to produce them, to come in and start culling them. He's complaining about the noise, and he wants them gone. And somehow he gets his way, and he's allowed, and this ought to be the most dastardly thing you ever find out, he was allowed to introduce a devastating disease twice into the population to kill them.
Wow.
How is that? I mean, now look around at what's going on in the world.
Yeah, we would do that to animals too, but also, of course, right now with us is the Ebola thing.
Oh, it's not just Ebola. I mean, you look at the history of disease on this planet, everything from the Black Death, MERS, SARS, Ebola, chikungunya, that one's not terrible, but maybe it sets you up for another one to wipe you out. It's devastating. It's really devastating. HIV. It goes on and on and on.
Do you think there's an Anunnaki connection to these more modern disease outbreaks?
Well, let's start asking this. So after 600 years, he introduced disease, famine, plague, and cut off the food supply, water supply. And after 6 years, they're eating each other. That's pretty destructive. He wanted them all gone. Then he, you know, oh, there's a flood coming, whether it was caused by natural sources or they created it. Either way, they swore an oath not to tell the humans. They wanted them all wiped out, every single one of them. They swore an oath. And the thing was, Enki swore this oath too, but he must have been just churning, you know, in his gut. Same with Isis, knowing they had created these beings, and now they're going to have to watch them all get wiped out. I mean, that's gut-wrenching to know that. You know, you kind of get attached to your your offspring in a way. You know, I don't care if it was through in vitro fertilization. It's still an offspring, right? So at this point, Enki's ordered to bring a flood. He refuses, but somehow it comes anyway. And he has sworn an oath not to say anything to this. The great Anunu is what and will call themselves. We, the great Anunu, swore an oath that no life was to survive this flood. Well, now you know that, and Enki had gotten somebody out, and it turned out to be it was none other than his son, the king of Shurupak, who, after 600 years, was there in the Bible. If you go read about the king of Shurupak, it was Noah. Okay, when the flood came. Yeah, exactly. So it was exactly the same being, and he had lots of other names. He was called Atrahasis in the Atrahasis account, which he was telling the story, which is terrific. He was known as Ziasudra in some of the Sumerian documents, and he was known as Utnapishtim in the Gilgamesh account. All the same name. So all of a sudden, the idea of somebody having more than one name, let's just do that right now. G-O-D. How many names of God are there in the various cultures in the world?
Right, too many.
Matt, there are so many. So which one is the right one? And nobody asked themselves. It's just the three-letter G-O-D one that got put into the Hebrew account. Well, guess what? Enlil was the head of the council, and he was also the chief deity of the city of Ur. Hello? He was the patriarch. He was the one who set up Abram to be the patriarch of the three world's religions.
Okay, and they call him Yahweh, too.
Yeah. Well, I got ahead of myself a little bit. Let's go. Let's do this flood thing. Everybody likes that. Okay, so here comes the flood. Enki tells Atrahasis, king of Shurupak, guess what? Flood's coming. You're in Enlil's territory now. My territory is now in Africa. You got to tell all the council elders stuff. You're leaving. Build a boat. And you're going to get out. And the reason you're going to tell them you're getting out is because you no longer have favor with my half-brother in this region. And it worked. That's what he decided to tell them. Now, Enki was a scientist and a geneticist, and they'd been here for thousands of years. Thousands of years. They had probably gotten every sample of every useful plant, flora, fauna, you can imagine as a laboratory aggregation of all this genetic material in Eridu. That's where they probably had it, because that was his first place where he was. He was there 5,000 years, by the way, before Enlil ever came to the Earth. So that was 450,000 years ago, Enki came. 445,000 years, Enlil came afterward to help bolster this mission.
Wow.
Okay, you with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so now the flood comes. Atrahasis gets in his seed bank vessel, along with an Anunnaki navigator that Enki appointed. They head for the IP point from Sippar, which is an initialization point for aviators out there that know what I'm talking about. It establishes the vector, the approach path vector to your landing site, and it's aligned with the runway. Well, that's what Mount Ararat was for Sippar. Okay, they could be down in Mesopotamia and see this high peak and align it with where the middle of the Tigris and Euphrates were. That's why they had a landing strip there. Okay, so Atrahasis was sent there on this boat, probably because the tsunami that came in would have washed it up to the highest threshold of the Zagros Mountains in South Turkey, and then it would have washed back out. So they were probably hoping to, when they got washed in, is to get caught on the high ground there in order to survive. Anyway, apparently he was successful. Atrahasis' family, you know the story of Noah, he gets out of his ark and lands there, the water starts receding, and he builds a little altar to venerate the person that saved him. Turns out it was his father, Enki. Well, about that time, the Anunnaki are in low Earth orbit surveying the flood damage when Enlil sights Atrahasis, or Noah, and his family on Ararat. And it turns out, I think there were glaciers at that time, and it looks like the landing on Ararat ended up melting the glaciers and the actual ark ended up about 13 or 30 miles south of where it originally was. And people have found it. People want to go on and look at the documentaries on Noah's Ark. They truly have found it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've seen those. I was curious about the validity of that.
Yeah, that's a true story. It just turns out that, you know, it was in a glacier and it was sliding down the mountain there, and it they may have called it slightly different how the mountains were named than what the locals ended up calling it. Who knows? But I think the mountain just to the south of there, I think it's within 30 miles of there. They believe that's where the glacier ended up depositing it. And from my experience and all the documentaries as I've watched, I'm quite convinced that's it, and they found it. Anyway, it lands there. They've got a seed bank to reestablish life. They do that. All domesticated cattle and seed grains that genetically have been looked at came from the Fertile Crescent for the most part. Now, I know there's some other grains around the world that ended up being added afterwards, but the ones they were using at the time had been genetically shown to be about 12,000 years ago, come from the Fertile Crescent. Well, this coincides with the last ice age when the flood was, so this all made sense to me scientifically, right? Okay, so at this point, we find out that Enki's son, the king of Shuruppak, is actually Atrahasis, and Enlil finds out that he's his son too, and that's why he saved him. So they kind of go at it, Enki and Enlil, discussing this oath they took and that Enki violated it by saving him. And he convinces him, you know, hey, we need some workers here to provide for us. Who's going to do it? We're here by ourselves now. Everybody's dead. Look at them all in the mud. You know, and Isis at this point, she's going through some ritual to have a necklace made to commemorate all these dead humans. And it's really a devastating scene when you really find out the real story of Noah's flood. So at this point, short time afterwards, a couple of the Anunnaki, some of them are demigods, some of them are full on. They decide to take this Adapa to Nibiru to meet Anu because... you know, they've created a new being on this foreign planet that they're doing this mission on, and I'm sure he's quite interested in knowing what the design constraints are, what are we in for, what are the problems going to be, you know, how do we know we can control them, all that. So Enki sends a tablet along with Ningxida and his other son, Dumuzi. I always get confused about who Dumuzi belongs to after reading the accounts. He ended up marrying a gal named Ereshkigal, who was the guardian of the underworld, if you will. So, and she was an Enlilite, so I was like, okay, let me figure this out. But, anyway, so Dumuzi and Ningxida accompany the Adam to meet Anu. They give him a tablet. Ningxida secretly gives it to him, says, here's the design constraints for my father. Here's what they're doing. 120-year lifespan. Get him intelligence. That's it. Anu sends him back, keeps Dumuzi on Nibiru for some reason, and later promises to send seeds with Dumuzi back to the Fertile Crescent, where it looks like the ewes and domesticated cattle showed up. Okay. So those came from Nibiru. Isn't that trippy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that account of the Adapa being taken to Nibiru was so important to me. And you can read a really good version of it in the Lost Book of Enki from Sitchin. There are other accounts as well. But the idea that we had a destiny that was determined by this being Anu and was going to be, I don't know, managed by this other being named Ningxida, who turns out to be Thoth. I mean, this is absolutely the genesis of our holographic simulator, Will, if you will, in determining what our constraints are in operating in this order of reality and how it is we're supposed to be used. So, I mean, that knowledge in and of itself is so important to the story, knowing that Ningxida played a key fundamental role in our management and an enslavement. He was to be our teacher. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he was to be able to teach us the way Enki taught the Adapa that got taken to Eridu, to the temple, but he was to be our teacher on this, in this simulation, to evolve our consciousness to the place where the Anunnaki found favor with us. Because apparently, you know, imagine you create a genetic offspring, don't train it anything to do but hard physical labor. You don't tell it anything about its origins or anything else. Imagine the quagmire of screwed up thinking that can end up with just like we have now, right? I mean, it just,
yeah, we're not
God
that far
better
off.
Your God, and we have the truth, and therefore we're going to kill you, and it just goes on and on and on. You know, right. Everybody knows the truth about it. There's no mystery. So, anyway, hey, at this point, I want to bring in something that you mentioned in your script.
Okay.
I was listening to Anthony Sanchez recently, and he was a kind of a technologist in California, like I was, who ended up on this Anunnaki story. And he got his story. He was definitely a blogger and keeping track of ancient astronauts and the Anunnaki and such. So he knew the story. But then he met some military secret source who gave him the lowdown in a private meeting about what's going on here now. In that account, he indicated that he believed the Ajiji were the alien Greys.
Right.
And I kind of took exception with that, and here's why. When we look at the depictions of the Watchers and their offspring, which became the Nephilim, we know that they were humanoid-looking, even though they got really tall after apparently about 600 years. There was something in their DNA relative to their existence on this planet that after a certain period of time, and Paul Hellyer verifies this, and so does Charles Hull, I'm sorry, Charles Hall does, and not Paul Hellyer. And that after about 600 years, they start growing quite large, and this is their downfall somewhat, and that their internal organs can't keep up with their skeletal structure. And this is something in their genetic code that causes this. Well, look at King Gilgamesh. He was huge compared to the populace. They showed him wrestling with two lions like they were kittens.
Right.
That's how big he was. And you know, in the depiction, he towered over all the other people. Well, that in the Bible, it talks about him becoming a Gaborim. Well, a Gaborim is a giant. So there was something in their DNA that was causing this. Well, guess what? They weren't alien gray looking. Okay, they looked just like we did. It just so happens that they had advanced genetics.
Right,
so the Watchers, I believe, looked a lot like the Anunnaki. Just so happens that, and they were considered fellow gods too. Okay, they called them gods. So I think the, and I'll just put a fork in it right now, and I could be out of bounds, but I truly think the Greys are a creation of the Anunnaki, but they were used to replace various, I don't know, specific functions, whether it's gathering genetic material from cows or working with the military to release advanced technology in lieu of in trade for underground bases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're kind of their chimera agents, just like we were, except they have different functions. And they were probably designed to look crazy so that they didn't lead them back to what the Anunnaki truly looked like.
Yeah, yeah, could be.
Yeah, totally. So anyway, they could be from another extraterrestrial location too. There were several of them here, so I'm not too sure, but they don't seem to have the same agenda as the Anunnaki, that's for sure. Okay, and I think okay. I think they're still here, and Anthony goes into detail about these the Greys anyway, and in the base in Dulce, New Mexico. And I won't steal any of his thunder, and I hope people do support him, just like they do me. But he's got some really great interviews talking about the Greys and some of their agenda. And apparently, according to him, the Anunnaki were trying to kill them off, and they gave him some disease like Serupu or Saku disease, just like they did the humans, and then exiled them to New Mexico, where they ended up living underground too, and they thought they would die off. Well, they didn't.
Wow.
That's it. That's his story. Okay. So
interesting.
Anyway. It's very interesting, though, yeah. But I do not think the Ajiji were the Greys.
Okay.
So are there any Ajiji left? This is an interesting question. In the Lost Book of Enoch, these Watchers that took on, I don't know, they took human wives for themselves, 200 of them under Azazel's leadership, they got a severe sentencing, which I truly to this day still don't understand. They were sentenced to be completely destroyed according to Thoth, Enoch, Ningxia, who's telling the story, by the way, at the end times, because they contacted him to run liaison with Anu to get them pardoned. He was the messenger, okay, back and forth. Ningxia, remember Mercury, Hermes, the messenger god? He's
right.
The same being. Yeah, yeah. So he comes back with this bad news that, no, you guys aren't going to get pardoned. You're going to be thrown, energy is going to be recycled at the end time. So keep that in mind. Imagine there are some beings who have been trapped on this in this simulation, in this quarantine simulation. They can't get out because of their constructs, probably because they were created by the Anunnaki too, and they're to die here. And here we are, close to the end times, assuming that's true. Of course, every generation has said that, but
yeah.
We have some pretty good indications this time, and we can go over those. Anyway, suppose they're trapped here, and they realize, hey, we're going to be recycled. We're going to take as many of you with us as we can. So I truly think that some of those showed up in some of the, I don't know, jihadist organizations around the world.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah. Because in the first Gulf War, which was interesting to me, I almost went to it. I got out of the military flying attack helicopters in 1989. The Gulf War started in 91. So my friends went there, and they were looking through the telescopic sight units of Apaches while the vehicles were leaving the Kafji Road out of Kuwait after all that carnage. As a matter of fact, one of them fired the first missile that stopped that convoy before the Joint Air Attack Team mission was done. And I actually ended up in observation helicopters by the time I was 25. I realized, yeah, I had a lot of testosterone, and I was trained to kill a commie for mommy. But guess what? I woke up. I became a conscientious objector. I didn't want to do that.
Amen.
And I couldn't wait to get out. I couldn't wait to get out, actually. I'm very lucky I did not have to slaughter massive numbers of humans, because I sure was surrounded by the weapons to do it.
Yeah, jeez.
Yeah, so anyway.
What year are we looking at now? The floods happened, and we're not quite obviously up to the writing of the tablets, but do you have any idea what type of year we're looking at?
Well, so keep this in mind. It was 600 years after the breeding program, which started 200,000 years ago when they first wiped people out. Okay, there were four major floods, according to the chief priest of Sais in Egypt. We think of only one of them. Okay, but and there were many minor ones too in that area. So what we know is about the last ice age. It was about 12,500 years ago when the major last devastating flood came through. And so what we believe is that was the flood of Noah. But then you go, wait a second. How could that be? How could Noah be that old? That's not possible. Well, guess what? In the Atrahasis account on Mount Ararat, when Enlil finally conceded to Enki that he was going to let him live, he gave him the ritual, the rite, the access, whatever it was, to eternal life on the spot. It's in the Atrahasis account. Guess what? Noah's still around. How do you like that? Unless he was killed, his DNA is such that his telomeres don't decay, and he got eternal life just like the Anunnaki had.
I wonder what he thought of Russell Crowe's depiction.
I bet he rolled over. I bet he just slapped his knee and said, "That's the most dastardly misrepresentation of my story I've ever seen." Yeah, that's what I think. So anyway, you know, the whole idea of the nursery rhyme, all these animals going onto one boat. I mean, that's not that's not even possible. I mean, come on. But bringing the genetic material from them, now that's intelligent.
And mm-hmm. That's what they would have that makes a lot more sense. But I mean, even as much as 80 years ago, people might not have even thought of that.
Well, that's true, because they were fed this Hebrew distorted account in the Torah that was completely wrong. It was designed to placate this monotheistic, calling himself God, almost head of the Anunnaki Council, genocidal murderer.
Well said. So get us up to like Egypt, because that's, I think, the as far back as most people are pretty familiar with, or Sumer, either one. But
We
got some ground to cover still.
Well, let's keep in mind that there was a lot. There were multiple histories in Mesopotamia. They started out 450,000 years ago, set up a redo, eventually set up seven pre-diluvial cities or so that were serving their various functions: metallurgy, mining. Shurupak was a health center. Bad Tabira was ore processing. Sippar was a landing site. Nippur was their mission control headquarters. And Ur also was a religious center, too. So Enlil showed up at Nippur and Ur, both of them. Okay. So how do we get to Egypt? Well, we knew in the casting of the lots in the Atrahasis that Enki was given all of Africa, which includes the northern part where Egypt is. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he clearly went down and followed the same model he had done in Mesopotamia, following where the rivers dump into the ocean, because that's where all the fertile soil is, and you got a fresh source of water all the time. So he chose the Egyptian Nile, right at the head end of the delta, where the Egyptian civilization got put up. Now, first of all, let's get some timing stuff straightened out. If they built Eridu 450,000 years ago, and then built several pre-diluvial before 12,500 years ago cities in southern Iraq, and then they were destroyed. Well, where does the Giza pyramid and the Sphinx come in, the two most famous ones, and all the other civilization along the Nile? Well, what we have some evidence to show, and if you go with the Egyptian curator, they'll tell you, oh no, it's only 3,100 years ago that Egypt was the Egyptian civilization was established.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know 3,800 BCE, Eridu was reestablished. We already know it existed 450,000 years ago. So after multiple floods covered with mud, they rebuilt on sites that they probably could get back access to the foundation stones, hoping that they got another long run before the next flood. You know, finally, it looks like they gave up. They got tired of that and moved up to higher ground. Egypt. How we get to Egypt. Okay, so yes. In the casting of the lot, Enki got Egypt. And so the very first dynasty of Egypt, according to Manetho, was ruled for 9,000 years by the first god. The first dynasty was all gods, meaning they were all the Anunnaki purebreds. They weren't demigods or offspring of the Anunnaki and the primitive workers. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the first god of Egypt was Ptah. He served in the first dynasty for 9,000 years. That was Enki. He set up Egypt, okay?
Okay.
Now, let's go back to the Sumerian account, or the Sumerian kings list. We can go through just the first nine rulers, and it ends up around 240,000 years. And each one, or several of the first ones, served 8 shars, which turns out to be 28,800 years. That's a long time.
Damn.
So all of a sudden, you think about 120-year lifespan being like us, going, looking at them, going, you dudes live a long time. Do you ever die? We thought they were immortal in the Greek gods, right? They all viewed their gods as immortal. Well, now you know why.
Yeah, great point.
They had different genetics than we did.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, and you know, while we're talking about that, we might as well bring up the 2009 three scientists that got their Nobel Peace Prize for discovering the telomeres. When they decay is what causes aging. And if you can stop that, you stop aging. And all the longevity hounds in the world really got on board with that and said, wow, we can live forever now. And I thought about that and I was like, wow, you know, maybe they designed us with these short lifespans because we got so little time and so much to get accomplished. We just got to get it done. Matt, you know, time work expands to fill the time you have available. So if you're trying to evolve your consciousness and get out of the simulator and you give them 600 years, you know, you're 200 years into it. Well, I'll be through with my martinis and my hedonistic lifestyle another couple hundred years. Then I'll get working on that. Right.
Right.
But you give them 120 years and it's really short. Guess what? they got to evolve fast or they get recycled. And we'll talk about that now.
Right. I was wondering what you thought about how reincarnation ties into this.
Well, let's go back to the Atrahasis. If Enki could kill a being, take its energy, put it in another body, and create our consciousness, our archetypal consciousness for us, which he did, all of a sudden you realize this being is has a relationship to energy and matter that we don't understand. But if you can do that, guess what? You can create a container anywhere and put energy in it and make it do whatever you want. And that's what we are. We are their slaves. We are here to do their mission. And the Sumerians had no issue with that. They knew this, okay? They knew they were genetically designed to do the Anunnaki functions, and they didn't have a problem with it. It's us who thought we were free and living in the, not living in a box, and, you know, got a constitution with amendments that aren't followed by the president at effing all. we're free. Land of the free, home of the brave. Well, how stupid is that?
Right.
Are you completely a moron? there's no freedom. Anytime they want, they can go, you didn't pay your taxes. You're going to jail. I digress. But
well, right. I mean, wow. We had to really go through the story in that type of detail just for the context for, you know, the rest of this conversation, but it is a very detailed story. You definitely know your stuff, and it can get confusing for people because some of the names we're not familiar with, or, you know, they change when you get to Sumer, they change when you get to Greece, they change again when you get to Rome. But
exactly. But once you know that and you see that and you've characterized just one of them, and by the way, we didn't even have to guess. Guess who told us their names across culture so we wouldn't have to guess? It was Isis herself. Mm-hmm. And then she had a stela in Rome that I personally saw, and you can find this on the internet, where she gives you her different names in different cultures. And you're like, oh, that was the mother of humanity that stuck her neck out to do that. How about that?
Man.
Anyway, the in vitro fertilized mother. But she had many children with Enki, by the way, too. Not in vitro fertilized ones. Yeah.
So I wanted to double back just a little bit. This control mechanism that you've mentioned and have alluded to a couple times, you mentioned its connection to the electromagnetic spectrum. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Okay. Well, first of all, I want you to understand the construct of the brain. We have three different layers of our brain through our probably genetic augmentations, the latest of which is a neocortex. Okay. You've got this mammalian and a reptilian layer as well. Well, all of a sudden, you realize that, you know, well, look at a reptile. It can take light into its pineal gland and derive enough sensation of this threshold to color its skin to absorb the right amount of radiation for energy. That's amazing.
Right.
So the pineal gland is its closed-loop feedback system for regulating its temperature and its energy. Okay, so what I'm leading up to is all of a sudden there's an interaction between energy and matter, electrical beings, biological beings like us. We're electrical beings. I mean, look at modern science and all the instrumentation that's looked at us. We can be characterized in terms of frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Our
visual range, our auditory range, our vocal range, and our EEG range relative to our heart rate. I mean, these are frequencies, okay? So we're electrical beings. I just demonstrated to you in the Atrahasis that Enki, this chief scientist from Nibiru, clearly understood enough about energy matter to take energy out of one being and put it into another one. Wow! Think about that. Think about that. So
power.
You're a container that he can put energy into. Okay, so now let's think about that model, energy and matter. You're a container. There's energy that can go into you. How is it stored? How is it interfaced to you such that you could potentially be controlled or interfaced to by the Anunnaki? Well, let's start with our brainwaves. We can go delta, theta, alpha, beta. That's about a half a hertz up to 20 hertz. And you can look at this on any monitor to see that that's our brainwave frequency. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there are various perceptions of reality that are correlated with brainwave frequency. And I hope everybody gets a chance to read Robert Monroe's book, Journeys Out of the Body. He found out that if you're between this awake and sleeping state and you keep your mind awake, focused on something, let the body go to sleep, that there's... You know, all of a sudden you start changing brainwave frequency and it's some pretty bizarre stuff, including separating your energy from your body. And this isn't new. I mean, this has been going on since, when I was 17, I read that book. And it changed my life, along with many other people. And he went to the full limits, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times doing this, documenting it, scientifically monitoring it, setting up an institute, inviting other people to come try it. And it's a worldwide phenomenon. There's so many people that have experienced their energy apart from their body. We shouldn't be surprised that the electromagnetic spectrum energy is neither created nor destroyed. It only changes state. That means it can be in your body or out of your body and operating in a different state or frequency. Okay, so frequency to me is dimension. Of course, I'm an electrical engineer, and that's why I think that way. So all of a sudden you realize, wow, all these weird things that happen in the electromagnetic spectrum can happen in my brain. Well, think about a radio signal. Okay, it's got a carrier frequency. It's at one frequency. You modulate data on it that's at a much less frequency, not to exceed the Nyquist rate. And then this gets sent through an antenna and travels all through space. Well, guess what? It hits all your radio antennas, hits your brain, everywhere else. Okay, now think about them modulating a signal onto another extreme low frequency that falls into delta, theta, alpha, beta in your brain waves. And they decide to broadcast a whole message to all the humans. Go, you're all worthless pieces of garbage and I want you all to kill each other. Yeah, listen, I'm not kidding. The state of humanity in their basic thinking is very destructive. And this has been shown by many people who have researched this, that, like, you know, all the teenagers who end up being suicidal and stuff, how come they're not having happy thoughts? This is worldwide, by the way. It's not just America.
It's built in.
So think about mind control and frequency and all this stuff that goes on with the subliminal messages and media and stuff. We know the Germans have been doing it for mind control and propaganda since World War II. Well, Walt Disney figured that out, and he used it real good. He liked that.
Yeah, that's actually what I was getting at. It was, I looked it up real quick, but it's, you know, natural. Apparently, we resonate at 432 hertz naturally, and in the 50s, they changed all music to be 440 hertz as the standard, and there's a lot of speculation that that kind of screws with our, you know, just screws with us. It screws with our resonance in some way.
Yeah, look, try this on for a second. What's your basic average heart rate? About 60 beats a minute, something like that.
Sure.
That's 60 hertz. What's the refresh rate for AC electricity?
60 hertz.
There you go. So you could use the wires in the wall to monitor the heart rate of a being if you had the telemetry ability to monitor that signal off the power grid infrastructure, every being.
Wow.
That's a primitive way to do it, but now they've got much more advanced ways to do it now. I mean, we've had satellite technology since the 60s. Do you realize that can do facial recognition and voice recognition?
Right.
So imagine taking it the next step further in the electromagnetic spectrum and going, hey, what chakra is that being evolved to down there? Is he in danger of waking up and revolting against the powers that be? Let's take a look. This pocket over here near Boulder, Colorado, and San Francisco, I don't know what's going on with them. Maybe they're taking drugs, but a bunch of them are waking up. Look at the color of their chakras. There's some that are even in their third one, their fifth.
Wow.
See what I'm saying? Listen, so we're a little color blips all along the surface of the earth that can be detected with satellite imagery to determine where your consciousness is.
And then you just cause a little disaster for that area.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can send good and bad based on where somebody is in their mission. And now you know, based on Snowden's discussions, that they've been monitoring all your electronics. Well, guess what? What if they've been you're a telemetry being. You were designed as a slave to do work. You think they didn't build in a way to monitor what independent thoughts you may be able to have to determine if your intent was to rebel? Come on. That was their primary reason for creating a replacement worker for the GGs, because they were putting down a rebellion. So guess what?
I'm in trouble.
You're a meat modem. They've been monitoring every thought you have, everything that you – well, as long as your thoughts are monitored, that's what's important. We essentially are nothing more than a meat modem. All of our senses are combined to create a perception of what we see outside of us in this simulator, a very limited range, by the way, okay, that ends up in a brainwave signal. Let me be clear on our limitations. We were given eyes to see from 400 to 700 nanometers, okay? What can an owl see? We can't even see at night. An owl and most animals can see in the dark. We can't.
Right.
What can we hear? 0 to 20 kilohertz? Wow, dogs hear better than we do. We have a very limited set of sensors, is what I'm telling you.
Right. These would be the kind of things that were built into us when we were engineered.
Well, if you were engineered to perceive the world in a particular way, then the sensors would be designed that way, that you only get to see what they let you see.
Yeah.
In other words, imagine they could exist in 900 nanometers in near infrared, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But you could only see to 700 nanometers. Well, they could be standing right next to you as infrared beings reflecting that light, and you can't even see them.
Man.
So it's that ridiculous on how enslaved we are with our sensors, okay? So now keep that in mind when you're going, could we really be in a holographic simulator? You're damn right. If they designed your sensors that way and limited them so much, you're that's your enslavement, is your sensation of what's outside of you.
Right. That makes sense. And so the big takeaway from the Anunnaki story, the reason we laid such groundwork is to really drill home that not only the details of this engineering, but also that the main battle here seems to be between Enki and Enel. And Enki tends to be, you know, the more caring creator, and Enel obviously is more aggressive. He doesn't really care about people. He wouldn't mind if we all died. So to bring this into modern times or throughout history within the elites, they seem to worship still in some form Enel, right?
Well, that's correct. And this is really sneaky. And I had to go look up Isaiah 14:12, I believe it was. Let me look real quick. In order to pin down a name that's been the most elusive to so many people, and that is that's the name of Lucifer, right?
Right.
So this is really crazy, because this is the real key. We know the name Enlil became Yahweh, Jehovah, El Shaddai, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay, he's the one that made the deal with Abram, his general, out of the city of Ur to go take Levantine away from Enki's offspring. And then poor Ishmael and Hagar, his mother, the Egyptian, remember the connection to Enki? They call it Hagar, Abram's handmaiden. He was a slave, okay? This Egyptian slave. He has a kid with him and sends him packing, okay? Well, Enlil made a promise to them that they would end up having a prolific nation of people as numerous as the stars, just like he did with Abraham. Well, now look what they're doing to each other. Oh, he didn't tell them he was going to bid them against each other and destroy them just for fun. So I got lost where you wanted me to go on this.
Well, you know, these shadowy organizations, they mask the entities they follow. But do we know historically who's been following who?
Oh, right. I was sneaking up on the name Lucifer, and for some reason he probably smacked me in the head. Anyway, so in Isaiah 14:12 in the King James Bible, I want you to hear this. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? Okay? I mean, if you infest them with a Saku disease and Sarupa disease, cut off the food and water, yeah, you'd probably weaken the nations, yeah. Okay, so keep that in mind. But then you go to the New International Version. This is, you know, the editorial oversight of Enlil's group to hide who he is. That's the only reference, by the way, in the King James Bible to Lucifer. And I'm telling right now, it's Enlil, okay? Mm-hmm. Now look what happens in the NIV Bible. How you have fallen from heaven, O morning star. That's a replacement right there for Lucifer. That was not in the King James. Son of the dawn, you've been cast down to the earth, you who once laid the nations low. Okay? So what I'm telling you is there's only one occurrence of his name that accidentally slipped through. The rest of the places he calls himself God. Okay? But this slipped through. He wasn't. This was another name for Enlil that they did not want you to know.
Hmm.
The Illuminati venerate Lucifer. That's a fact. There's no question about that. The Catholic Church venerates Lucifer and calls his son Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
This is a fact. They do this in their homily during Easter the last 2 years. For those of you who want to go look on the internet, he did this in, they did it in Latin, and they specifically said Lucifer and his son Jesus. Okay, Jesus, by the way, was not the real person who actually gave the humans the way out of the simulator. His other name was Ningxida. I just told you that earlier because he was appointed by Anu to be our teacher. And he had many incarnations. And Edward Casey did a great job in a table talking about the many incarnations of Ningxida. One of them was Yeshua as Enki's son that went into the Levantine to wake up the humans under Enlil's priests that were there, the Jewish priests, and the Roman authorities that were there, beating down the humans in this area that used to belong to Enki. Now it belonged to Enlil because he now has Levant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea of routing the Levant and getting Enki's offspring out of there using Abram to conduct genocide, then give it, the land to one of his sons, well, what an abomination. You know, anyway, so who are these? Who are they? Okay, so now I just told you that this other name you show up that's showing up in the music industry and everywhere, this Luciferian Illuminati. Okay, the Illuminati were affiliated with the a secret organization in Europe that supposedly started in 1776 under Adam Weishaupt.
Right.
It actually started much earlier, in my opinion, and it had to do with the Catholic Church and their papacy was mixing religion and authority under their rulership, even though they had a czar, to route this secret organization that was dedicated to the Enkiites, and I believe that was the Masons. You read their original charter, their secret doctrine was to be a part of the rising of the New Atlantis and set up this New Atlantis, not a New World Order, but a New Atlantis, okay, because Enki was the chief deity of Atlantis. So this was so important to me to follow them from Greece back to the United States to pin them down. So what did we know about Atlantis that was so crucial? We get taught in school that, you know, democracy started in Greece, and that's about what we get. And then their mythology about their gods, it's all BS, right? That's what we get told. But the reality is Enki was the chief deity of Atlantis, according to the Critias from Plato. And he was very, very honorable, very righteous, and he wasn't a destroyer. The character qualities that he had, the people trying to ascribe to, were fantastic. They were so amazing, and his society was so advanced and civilized that Solon, the wisest man of Greece, heard about them, and he wanted to model his government after them. Okay, that's why he looked into it. Okay, so from Greece, and the sinking of Atlantis, which this is a really interesting story that most people don't know. Right at the end of the Critias transcript, where Plato stopped his story, he didn't finish it, he talked about what went wrong on Atlantis. And this is a message for everybody, especially America, since the New Atlantis was designated to rise in Washington, D.C., and you can go look at all the symbology there, it's all there. But the fact that it's being destroyed is very telling. And people want to know, why is that happening? Why are we losing our sovereignty? Why is our constitution being trampled? Well, why? Why is the DHS militarizing the police? And on and on and on.
Right.
well, it looks like a new world, or actually it's an old world order that we've seen before, a tyrannical beatdown is what's arising. Well,
right.
Ask yourself why. Well, at the end of the Critias, I'm going to tell you why. Apparently, after a long time of the people, and there were demigods there, because Cleto, Enki's wife, was a normal primitive worker. So he had kids with him, had 10 of them. Atlas was one of them. So he was a demigod of Enki. His the daughter of Atlas and his wife was Maya. You know, Maya Majesta. She shows up in the Greek discussions of the Greek gods. Okay, mm-hmm. And it turns out that Hermes was the offspring of Zeus and Maya. So all of a sudden, you realize now his incarnation is he's bridging the gap between the Enlilites and the Enkiites in his role as Hermes in Greece. That is amazing. He ended up on the Olympian Council too.
Hmm.
This is the being Ningxia. Okay, so. All of a sudden now we're starting to talk about some names that show up in Sumeria that also show up in the Greek pantheon, okay? And not all of them, because there were the Titans and the Olympians. The Olympian Council was headed by Zeus, who we now know as Enlil, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the beings on that council, many of them were affiliated with him. There were some Enkiites on there, but not many. The Enkiites were affiliated with the Titans or the Atlanteans, who was part of this Oceanic League. And the Olympians won the war against the Titans, enslaved the remnants in the city of Tartarus, and most of them died there. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden you realize Enlil, this bureaucratic commander, willingly did the destructive thing again, reasserted control, because he had lost control on the council in 2000 BCE. One of Enki's sons took it. So this back and forth on the Anunnaki Council, rank of 50, Lord of the Earth, is what predicates what us humans in this simulator get to experience. And the last 2,000 years has been run by an Enlilite, and we've seen nothing but war and destruction. Tell me I'm wrong.
Right. Man, fascinating stuff, Gerald.
Well, listen, something really important happened this weekend. I know we're about to finish up, but I wanted to say something about what's happening in world events, because I know it's very disturbing with Ebola and all the different wars and things that are going on, and the idea of these jihadists having 22 different training posts in the United States,
mm-hmm.
preparing for, yeah. And they, you know, they're all over. Go look up some of the places that they've occupied. I mean, it's just crazy. They called them, I don't know, these little cities that they've set up, and, oh no, we don't have any weapons. Oh no, we're not doing any jihadist training here. So what's going on? You know, according to the Illuminati, the Luciferian tradition, they're setting up a very, very negative culling to push all of the world's constructs to the most negative place they can. This is the 95% culling that they want. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you see it in the media, you see it in the government, you see it in the military, you see it in the universities. It's happening everywhere. Everybody's having their money stolen, getting enslaved, take their property away, no more sovereignty, all your rights are gone, right? Well, this is part of what's happening right before this culling. And by the way, this year, on the Georgia Guidestones, some people will know
yes.
about that. This year, a new little cube was put up there.
Right. What's that about?
It said 2014, meaning it's happening now. It's happening now. So listen, if we have and we just entered World War III officially this week, when the United States illegally went into Syria, no congressional approval, no UN approval, and are dropping bombs on people in Syria. This is the government that's out of control of the United States, okay? Well, who's doing this? This is from those two beings occupying the underground base. Listen, they had a contract. They traded these advanced military weapons for them with certain requirements attached to them, and they had expectations. And they're fulfilling those right now, okay?
Man.
And remember I mentioned ISIS's name getting smeared, Hermes 9000 drone getting smeared with Israel, and Enki's symbol, the trident, getting smeared. Well, listen, I think the Enkiites are planning and plotting. They're absolutely the best world's chess players, and when they come out, they're going to pull the carpet out from under the New World Order. It's already happening. It's already happening with Russia and China joining together, so there's an alternative world monetary system to the petrodollar that means nothing, it's already happening. So creation and destruction happening at the same time. And I truly believe that, unfortunately, if you're in the United States, you're in animals' territory right now. And just like in the Atrahasis, when the king of Shurupak decided he was in animals' territory and he had to go to Enki's territory to survive, that's what's happening in the United States. You can pick up a gun and think you're going to fight these beings and blah, blah, blah. You're out of your mind. You're out of your mind. You pick up a gun, you've signed up to be destroyed, just like an Alien versus Predator. Watch it again. Watch it again.
Very insightful movie, that Alien versus Predator.
Yes, it was, wasn't it? Wasn't it? Yeah.
Man, well, very cool. It has been a real pleasure. Always fascinated by the stories of man's oldest known writings, and to hear how it connects to modern day is just awesome to hear. And before we go, would you like to tell the people a little bit about your website, a little more about the book, or anything else you're working on in the future?
Certainly. My book is The Anunnaki of Nibiru. It's available on Amazon. And if you go to my website, Gerald, GERALDCLARK 77.com, I've got links there for my audio book, which I sell for a very meager $7.77. And it's available digitally for people to download it. There's links there to my Facebook and my YouTube channel. I got a bunch of videos under the Anunnaki of Nibiru playlist there for people, including some of the legendary videos of Zechariah Sitchin as he interviewed with the head of the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C. to discuss Nibiru. And that's when it was disclosed. So I find that's a really wonderful video. There's a whole bunch of videos in there. Some of them I've done recently, tying together the African gold with Ebola and the quest of the New World Order to get that gold so they can prop up this petrodollar. They got no gold, right?
That's it's all about that gold still.
If they can get that gold, then prop up that petrodollar and all the problems go away and it won't lose its status as a world reserve currency. That's why they're attacking Africa right now. That's where the gold is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Look at the Viking Mining Corporation and they their stakeout in Ghana. Now, listen, what right do countries have to go into other countries and steal their resources, especially ones as valuable as gold and oil? I mean, that just in and of itself is a bullying tactic that just shouldn't be allowed in the world, but that's how it is. So My website, I told you that. My YouTube channel is Gerald Clark, and my Facebook page as well. I do a lot of interacting with people on Facebook. I know that everything's monitored, and I hope they're monitoring. I'm hoping that people in three-letter agencies are listening to me right now, realizing I'm telling the truth, and they turn on the people that are telling them to do unethical things. Turn on them. You don't have to follow their illegal orders.
Right.
That goes to the military people, too. Okay? That's right. Why I put it right out there. I'm not hiding it at all. I want it right out in their face.
Just put the uniform down, people.
Yeah. And I want to put a plug in for my wife. I talked about heightening your energy body. Well, listen, if you follow a vegan diet, you'll get there a lot faster, too. And you'll probably have less propensity to all the diseases that are showing up in all the processed products and meats as well. You want mad cow disease or trichinosis? I don't. Ebola can live in meat. Lives in monkeys and other things, okay? Think about disease that gets in meat. It's kind of a dangerous thing, okay? Fish as well, okay? So you want to improve your energy body? Think about that. And there's a couple things out there I want to expose people to. I talk about my book, Starfire Gold. The Anunnaki were using it to increase their longevity, and it really is wonderful on your energy body. Okay, try it sometime. My wife at artisticvegan.com is basically, she's started out with food and ended up as an alchemist. And listen, Thoth had something to do with that. I'm quite sure she's got a wonderful, wonderful book called The Sorcerer's Stone, A Guide to Alchemy. And in there, it talks about Thoth being the first alchemist and his explaining this to humans. It's really, really fantastic. Well, listen, in that thing, some of the colloidal things that we discovered have a profound impact on disease. One of those is colloidal silver. And we just put up a video from a guy who studied anthrax, SARS, Ebola as a doctor through agencies with the DOD and DARPA to show the effects of colloidal silver. Guess what? He didn't put it up against anything that it didn't kill. So
do you ingest that?
Absolutely. You can do it topically or you can ingest it, no more than 10 parts per million. So we've started producing it now. Lots of other people do. And it is fantastic. And listen, that could be the secret weapon against every disease on this planet.
Man, I'm going to have to get in on that.
Well, look, we'll do some research. Go to Artistic Vegan and get the link to the doctors that are disclosing this. It's not me, okay? But I listened to what they're saying and realized the method in which this works, and I realized that they weren't lying. I'm a scientist. I can figure this out. Well, they're telling the truth. So we got and started experimenting with ourselves. We're very excited about it. So
that's awesome.
I want to see that. I want to see a clinical trial done with Sierra Leone, for instance, to talk about this. Not that I want to push products. Not at all. I want people to make it for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because we should not be vector agents for an unethical government that's experimenting on us.
Okay? Amen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's leave it on a happy note. I think creation and destruction are happening at the same time. Choose creation in the Enkiites, and you'll have a good chance with Thoth's leadership to get out of the simulator and move on to a new dimension to evolve your consciousness to the next mission that you get. Maybe it's another planet. Maybe it's having your own planet to try to play God on it, since you don't agree with the way they did it. Who knows?
Cheers. Yeah, well said, man. Thanks so much. This has been a serious pleasure. Hopefully we can do it again sometime. There's so much more depth to this material. But until then, take care of yourself, man, and hail Enki.
Yeah, and hail the creator of all, too. And listen, brother, I really appreciate it. Let's do it again sometime.
For sure. There we have it, folks. A guest I definitely enjoyed, a narrative and perspective that I think does a great job of clearing up a lot of the layers and layers of confusion that have been laid upon us. We did fit a lot of great stuff into that first hour, and in the Plus show, Gerald gives us more examples of the Big Illusion, how the Zodiac Wheel really relates to the changing of the Anunnaki Council and the new direction of humanity, and that's why so many ancient cultures built structures to keep track of these celestial alignments. We talk about Admiral Byrd running into the Anunnaki at his journey to the pole. We talk about the stories of the Tall Whites and how they're most likely the Anunnaki themselves, underground bases, our DNA, the chakra systems, the Great Awakening, reincarnation, our diets, the cover-up of Egyptian mummies, the Great Culling, how this ancient story relates to the modern-day religions, ISIS, the Malaysian Airlines ritual, the Hermes drone, how this plays into the global currency wars and our situation with Russia. I gotta admit, it's a pretty compelling angle. So consider the $5 tip to me and THC and unlock the mysteries of THC+. But whether we're talking about the Anunnaki or the Archons or the Reptilians or the Demons of the Abyss, there is some type of strange communication going on between the elite and something above them. I'm pretty comfortable saying that now and might not have been 2 years ago. But we're on a journey, looking at these strange topics from every angle, and a different lens is going to seem clearest to different listeners, but all in all, considering how diverse THC can be sometimes, 99% of you guys are super cool and respectful to the guests and me, and very open-minded in a closed-minded world. I just couldn't be happier with how things are going. I was just asked by the people of the show Portlandia to be able to use the Riot Cops design from Conspiracies and a skit on the show in their new season, so that's pretty cool too. We are up on Stitcher for iPhone users now. You just search for the Higher Side Chats Plus on Stitcher and it'll prompt you for your login. So that's awesome. They made a special system just for THC, so big thanks to them. It doesn't work on PC or Android, and I'm not sure if it ever will, but there are so many good options for Android that it really isn't necessary. And a few more people are throwing in that extra $5 to the money bomb now, so I think we are just over $200, and usually we pick a winner on the last episode of the month, but this time it's going to be the episode after, because I actually have this show, the next show, and the show after that complete and good to go and set to release on schedule, because me and my special lady are taking our first trip since I left my job in February. We really haven't been able to do much of anything, and we're taking a road trip up to Seattle and Portland, up through the Redwoods, gonna see Crater Lake and Mount Shasta, and some cool-ass national parks. We are sleeping in the car, but I'm still super, super psyched. I've been working so hard on this and been so stressed about making it work and second-guessed if it was ever gonna work, and now THC Plus has a decent-sized base. I've managed to be my own tech support and customer service for Plus people. Anyone who's had a little hiccup knows that. And I think a place
has finally been reached, where I can take a little time off and celebrate the accomplishment and reward an amazing partner for having the faith to hold up the financial pillars of our life while I worked on this dream and took some risks. And so she deserves this time away as much as anyone, more than I do. She's been the biggest silent investor in me and THC, and we really wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her and many other people. So that said, if your partner does have a passion, think about how you could foster that and maybe make life better for both of you. But the next two episodes are in the chamber, ready to roll out for you on the 18th and the 24th. And if any listeners in the Seattle or Portland area can offer any trip advice or would like to grab a drink or a smoke, don't hesitate to Facebook or email me. And I'll see you guys in the future. Much love and appreciation for all of you. That is it for me this week. Here's a closing track called Are We Alone by a very talented lady who goes by the name Nordic Fire. She's using the violin and new ways, and she does amazing cover songs as well. We've been talking about having her cover some of my favorite songs. Hopefully we can find the time and resources to make that work. But if any other talented people might want to work on some cover versions of relevant songs, shoot me an email on that as well, and maybe we can form a group of house bands for THC. Well, either way, she's great and also has an awesome Radiohead Creep cover out there too, so check her out, and I'm gonna go hit the road. Your move, Analyte to the Dark Cabal. Your fucking move.
We look to